Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th hour apostolic Sabbatarian congregation of Mount Zion at the 12th hour in the Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is January 14, 2017, or the Shabbat 17, 2020. We will start our first service on the Sabbath day with a song entitled Until Then. My heart can sing when I falsely remember the heartache is but a stepping stone along the trail that's winding always upward. This troubled world is not my final. Until then, my heart will go on singing. Until then, with joy I'll carry on. Until the day my eyes behold the city. Until the day Your calls me. The things of earth will dim and lose their value if we recall their bottles for a while. And things of earth that cause the heart to chase and bomb, I remember there will only bring a smile. But until then, my heart will go on singing. Until then, with joy I'll carry on. Until the day my eyes behold the city. Until the day Your calls me home, this weary world with all its toil and struggle may take its toll of misery and strife. The soul of man is like a waiting falcon, but its release is destined for the sky. But until then, my heart will go on singing. Until then, with joy I'll carry on. Until the day my eyes behold the city. Until the day Your calls me home. 144,000, part 1, Shepherd Rod, volume 1, by V.T. Hollis. We're going to start with page 1, about the author, his preface. It says, it is the intention of this book to reveal the truth of the 144,000 mentioned in Revelation 7. But the chief object of this publication is to bring about a reformation among Yahweh's people. For the truth herein contained is divided into 7 sections, giving proof from 7 different angles for the preventing of any doubt or confusion. For the subject is made clear by the use of the Bible and the writings given by the Spirit of Prophecy. For the truth revealed here is of the great importance unto the congregation just now because of the foretold danger which Elohim's people are soon to meet. For it calls for decided action on the part of the believers to separate themselves from all worldlings and worldliness, to anchor themselves on the solid rock by the obedience to all the truth known under this denomination. We must escape the great ruin. The Yahweh's voice crieth unto the city, and the man of wisdom shall see thy name. Hear ye the rod, and who hath appointed it? Micah 6:9. Okay, let's go now into the introduction. This publication contains only one main subject with a double lesson, namely the 144,000, and a call for the Reformation. This object in view is to prepare Elohim's people for the impending doom of the Ezekiel 9 prophecy. There is no new doctrine taught, neither does it condemn the ones we have. For the wonderful light between its pages shines upon a large number of the scriptures which we have had no understanding of hitherto. For the interpretation of these scriptures is supported entirely by the writings of the sister E.G. White, and that is termed the spirit of the prophecy. For this publication does not advocate a new movement, and it absolutely opposes such moves. It brings out a positive proof which cannot be contradicted, that the Seventh-day Adventist Church has been used by the Yahweh to carry on his work since 1844. For the following is a partial list of the Bible chapters, Revelation 7, and chapter 13, 1-3, Isaiah 4, and chapters 54-66, inclusive of the Isaiah's book, Ezekiel 4-9, Micah 4-7, inclusive, the Exodus movement, the patriarch's types, the loud cry, a complete explanation of the 144,000, meaning of Esau and Jacob, Martin Luther's action prophecy, and the typical and antitypical periods. For the Yahweh of the Hebrews hath met with us, let us go, we pray thee, 3 days' journey into the desert, and sacrifice unto the Yahweh of Elohim, lest he fall upon us with pestilence, or with the sword, Exodus 5:3. The 144,000, section 1 of the Shepherd Rod, it says that this subject of the Revelation 7 is doubtless the most frequently discussed Bible subject by the Seventh-day Adventists and other Bible students than any other biblical truth. Many theories have been advanced by the denomination, but not one has stood the test without the contradiction. Great men of the both biblical and secular knowledge have diligently searched the Bible and have proved nothing as to who this company is. We read in Great Controversy, page 397, that the spirit of the error will lead us from the truth, and the Spirit of Yahweh will lead us into the truth. But say you, a man may be in error and think he has truth, what then? We answer, the Spirit and the Word agree. If a man judges himself by the Word of Yahweh and finds a perfect harmony through the whole Word, then he must believe that he has the truth. But if he finds the spirit by which he is led does not harmonize with the whole tenor of the Yahweh's law or book, then let him walk carefully lest he be caught in the snare of the devil. Okay, it says, our sister Ellen E.G. White was doubtless far more acquainted with this subject than anyone living at this time, for she wrote much about them and had visions of them. There is no doubt that she, too, spent much time in searching both from the Bible and her own writing, but she has failed to point out the exact company by assembling the references together and clear the mystery. For the question is, why have all these righteous people who earnestly search for the truth fail to produce any evidence as to who this wonderful company really is. The answer we give is because it was not present truth in their time. Sister White could have given a theory of some kind far more fitting and correct than any other theory ever advanced. She used wisdom and good judgment in leaving out her own opinion. Yahweh will make these things known at the appointed time only. Men may be made to believe a thing for a while, but except it be the truth, it cannot last. Thus it would be unwise and a waste of time for one to try to tell who the 144,000 are until the scroll has made a turn and one truth reveals another. Now what did I just say? Folks, we are at this place where we are coming up on the time when we're going to have to know, someone's going to have to know the exact time when this 144,000 group's going to come forth. Because they represent the wheat. The wheat is a grain that is a symbol of the remnant that comes out of the Adventist Church. And the remnant is the leadership. The remnant is not the members, the laity of the church. Well, I say they're not. They are connected with if the leaders, the 144,000, which are the leaders that are represented by this wheat grain, then their families that are saved with them will certainly be classed with the remnant. But when it talks about remnant per se, it's talking about the leadership is saved first. If this study would unmask the mystery and harmonize with the scriptures and the spirit of the prophecy, then we must conclude that Elohim appointed time for this subject has come. Sister White had received inspiration on this subject, but like Daniel, was not permitted to know who, how, and when made until Yahweh's appointed time. For the following is a question made by her to Elder E.E. Andros. I feel confident, Elder Andros, that the brethren in Southern California will find a blessing in the reviewing of the teachings of the Scripture concerning the 144,000 and bringing unto the bear upon these teachings whatever of light there may be in the published writings of the Spirit of Prophecy. And as prayerful consideration is given, the matter in all its bearings, howbeit Yahweh will make the truth sufficiently clear to make possible the avoidance of the needless and unprofitable question, not vital unto the salvation of the precious soul. Someday this subject must be understood, for inspiration makes no useless statement, and it cannot be in the Bible for a mistake. It must be understood before the number 144,000 is made, or it would not be of no value. When understood, it will guide the feet of the 144,000 in the straight path, just as the first, second, and third angels' messages have led thousands of souls unto the Yeshua. Matters not so long as one does right. This is our next point to make here, reading from V.T. Hollis' writings, Shepherd Rod, Volume 1, number page 14. It says, it has been said by some that it matters not whether one understands the subject of the 144,000 or not, so long as he does right. This is certainly true if we do right. But how do we know whether we do right or not, except we understand Yahweh's doctrine? How can we know whether we keep the right Sabbath or belong to the right congregation unless we understand that doctrine? Why is it important to understand Daniel 7, the beast and his image, and many other Bible prophecies? If we do not understand the subject of the 144,000, we may not be sealed. For it would be worthless to understand it after the sealing, just as it would be of no value to understand the beast and his image after his work on earth is finished. For the angel's message of Revelation 7, the angel ascending from the east, is as important as the first, second, and third angel's messages of the Revelation 14:6-11. It must be understood and given unto the people at the right time. It's also of the mighty angel of Revelation 18:1. For the loud cry must come at a given time. And that time would be in the judgment of the living time in the 12th parabolic hour. V.T. Hollis was writing this when in the 10th parabolic hour. He was far removed from the 12th parabolic hour because the 11th parabolic hour had to follow the shepherd rod. And the shepherd rod came to their close in 1970. That was a 40-year allotted time for them, for that feeding pasture, Mount Carmel. Verlis W. Johnson had the next 40-year period assigned to him, but he only covered 33 and a half years of it, and then the last 7 years was turned over to Elijah David from 2003 to 2010, and then that ended the Mount Gilead period. Okay, it says, for this angel, Revelation 7, cannot be the third angel, for John's explanation of them different. For the three angels of Revelation 14 are flying in the midst of heaven, or where the sun stands at noon. But the one of Revelation 7 is ascending from the east, or the rising of the sun, meaning that that angel has already come, and he was abiding in Jerusalem, until the prophecy opens up and sends him to the west. And that's from Jerusalem to the United States to address the 144,000 of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And that angel coming from the east of Revelation 7 is Yahshua. So Yahshua has already come in this prophecy. And no doubt he is here now. And people don't realize the second coming has already taken place. The message of this angel has never been understood at any time, nor the proclaimed by this denomination or any other people, and only theories have been advanced. It is evident that this truth, as other truths, must come at the right time, meaning of the 7 years of the plenty and 7 years of the famine, found only one way. When the perplexing subject is made clear, then we must believe that the time is here. But this, as all Bible truth, is found only one way and in one place, namely the storehouse of the Bible. Bear in mind that as Joseph of the ancient days controlled the storehouse, even so Yahshua controls the scriptures and the times. Many righteous men in the past went to Yahshua Joseph and got all the present truth corn for that particular time that they could assimilate. While he, Yahshua, is liberal, he is also careful and therefore has nothing to waste. When Joseph gathered the corn in Egypt and stored it in the storehouses, he did it not for the wealth, but to sustain life in the next 7 years of the famine. The corn was a symbol of the Yahshua's word, as we shall endeavor to prove. Reasons for the believing that the 7 years of the plenty and the 7 years of the famine in the days of Joseph in the ancient Egypt represent the world's history in two sections of the time are as follows. In volume 3, page 369, we read, Isaac was a figure of the son of Yahweh who was offered a sacrifice for the sins of the world. Again, we read in the Desire of the Ages, page 112, and in the Ram, divinely provided in the place of the Isaac, Abraham saw a symbol of him who was to die for the sins of the men. Thus Isaac and the ram are symbols of the Yahshua's submission, death, and sacrifice. Of the Jonah we read in the Desire of Ages, page 406, as the Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the belly of the whale, for the Yahshua was to be at the same time in the heart of the earth. And as the preaching of the Jonah was a sign unto the Ninevites, so the Yahshua's preaching was a sign unto his generation. See also Prophets and Kings, page 274. Elisha was a symbol of the Yahshua. Prophets and Kings, page 240. Like the Savior of mankind, of whom he was a type. Elisha and his ministry among men combined the work of the healing with that of the teaching. These are the reasons why Isaac, Jonah, and Elisha are types of the Yahshua, representing the different phases and imports of the work of the Yahshua. Of Joseph, we read in Patriarchs and Prophets, page 369. Joseph was a representative of Yahshua, and their benefactor, unto whom all Egypt turned with a gratitude and praise that heathen people were to behold the love of their Creator and Redeemer. Egypt was an idolatrous nation and is a symbol of the world and sin. Joseph was a type of Yahshua, the sovereign of the world. As Joseph was sent into Egypt to preserve life, just so Yahshua was sent into the world, Egypt, to preserve life. Quoting from Patriarchs and Prophets, page 231, we read, "And Yahweh sent me before you to preserve you a posterity in the earth, and to save your lives by a great deliverance." Thus it is written that these deliverances were an object lesson of the spiritual blessing. But how did Joseph bless the ancient world? Was it not by the corn that he preserved in the 7 years of plenty? Had it not been for the immense storehouses full of the life-giving energy, what blessing could Joseph have been unto the ancient world were it not for his Elohim-given wisdom to give the corn with which to feed the world in the time of his great need? The corn which Joseph preserved is a blessing, and it is written, the corn represents spiritual blessing. The word of Yahweh, Yahweh's word, is spiritual bread, and men have lived on it. Moreover, he said unto me, Son of man, eat that thou findest, eat this roll, and go speak unto the house of Israel. Ezekiel 3:1. That thy words were found, and I did eat them, and thy word was unto me the joy of rejoice and rejoicing of my heart. For I am called by thy name, O Yahweh Elohim of the host. Jeremiah 15:16, and had rained down manna upon them to eat, and had given them of the corn of heaven. Psalms 78:24. Our fathers did eat manna in the desert, as it is written, he gave them bread, corn, from heaven to eat. Then Yahshua said unto them, Verily, verily, I say unto you, Moses gave you not that bread from heaven, but my Father giveth you the true bread from heaven. John 6:31-32. To him that overcometh will I give to eat of the hidden manna. Revelation 2:17. And I took the little book out of the angel's hand and ate it up, and it was in my mouth sweet as honey. And as soon as I had eaten it, my belly was bitter. Revelation 10:10. The latter prophecy has been applied unto William Miller after he had studied the book of the Daniel and accepted this teaching. Symbolically speaking, he ate the little book, which became a part of him and his co-workers. Had this not been true, he would not have proclaimed the message with such enthusiasm as he did. As the expected event failed to transpire in 1844, unto them it was a bitter experience, thus fulfilling the scriptures that men have eaten the word of Yahweh. If the corn does not represent the word as in the Bible, then the question may be asked, of what is Joseph a type? Isaac, Jonah, and Elisha each represent a certain faith of the Yahshua's work, and if Joseph represents Yahshua, the food gathered, the word, the storehouse, the Bible, then the 7 years of plenty during which time the food was gathered must be a symbol. Otherwise, the picture could not be perfect. And if the years of plenty are a type, then the years of famine must be taken into consideration. Each of these two sections of the time bear the number 7, meaning perfect, fullness of time, entire, or all of the time. The symbol can represent only one thing, and that it is the world's history in two great divisions of time, namely B.C. and A.D., before the Yahshua and after the Yahshua. In other words, it divides at the cross. B.C. up to the cross, A.D. after the cross. With the cross, Yahshua the dividing line for all the prophets and the law prophesied until John. For it is for this reason Yahshua made the statement, for we have no other thus far. The years of plenty is B.C., in which time Elohim gave plenty to supply the world's need for the years of the famine. The New Testament A.D. As Joseph gathered the corn into the storehouses by his servants, the Egyptians, just so gathered the corn of the Yahweh, spiritual food in the Bible, the storehouse, by his servants, the prophets. Elohim, who at sundry times and in divers manners spake in time past unto the fathers, Thou, the prophet, hath in these last days spoken unto us by his Son, whom he hath appointed heir of all things, by whom also he made the world. So, Yahweh the Father created the world by his Son, Yahshua. Now, how many worlds did he create? Well, in our hemisphere, he created 12. This was the 12th one. So now, then the other 11 must represent the sons of Jacob. They must occupy the other 11 in this solar system. Okay, it said Hebrews 1:1-2. Had it not been for this purpose, then we ask, what could it have been for? Elohim, who is responsible for the event, did it not to bring hardship to his disciples or the star of the world, as the famine was not in Egypt only, for we read, and the famine was over all the face of the earth. Genesis 41:56. Had this not been the symbol, why would Elohim have brought the famine over all the earth? Some people may have difficulty in being convinced, and others can never be convinced, but the harmony of the lesson can hardly be questioned. If the 7 years of the plenty and the 7 years of famine are not a type of the world's history, Joseph's immense storehouse is not a type of the Bible, the corn gathered in the 7 years of plenty not a type of the word in the Bible, the feeding of the world not a type of the New Testament, time consuming the scriptures gathered in the Old Testament time, then we ask, where are the types for all these events? Had not Elohim given the gospel in the types as well as in the prophecy? For Yahshua was the foundation of the Jewish economy. The whole system of the types and symbols were the compacted prophecy of the gospel, a presentation in which were bound up the promises of the redemption. Actually, Apostles, page 14, by Ellen G. White, it says, if the 7 year of the plenty and the 7 years of famine did not represent the world's history, the coincidence, as we shall endeavor to bring forth, could hardly have been possible by an accident, for the Yahshua said, gather up the crumbs, and there's that there be no waste. It was his word that multiplied the loaves and fishes. These crumbs represent the very words he spoke. For we read the following in volume 2, page 606. I am authorized from Yahweh to tell you that not another ray of light through the testimony will shine upon your pathway until you make a practical use of the light already given. But now we must have corn or else we shall die. As a people, we have much boasted that we have all the truth. But such a statement cannot be found between the pages of the Spirit of Prophecy. Not another ray of light will shine upon your pathway until you make your practical use of the light already given. These words suggest that there is more light to shine, and light is the truth. Again, according from the Testimony of the Ministers, page 107, no one should claim that he has all the light there is for Yahweh's people. But Yahweh will not tolerate this. He has said, I have set before thee an open door, and no man can shut it. Even if all our leading men should refuse light and truth, that door will still remain open. Yahweh will raise up men who will give the people the message for this time. 7 years of plenty and 7 years of famine. The 7 years of the plenty and the 7 years of famine in the days of the Joseph in the ancient Egypt represent the world's history in two sections of the time as previously explained, namely B.C. and A.D. B.C. up to the cross and A.D. after the cross. Each one of these sections bears the biblical number 7, meaning complete. The 7 years of plenty is B.C. Though one may doubt the application made here, the lesson we receive from is true. In the Old Testament time, Elohim have gave plenty through his prophets, and Yahshua, Joseph, stored it in the storehouse, Bible. But as we have no record that there was any of the corn left when the 7 years of famine had passed, neither was there any shortage. Therefore, it is plain that all the scriptures are to be understood, used up before the second coming of the Yahshua. There you have it. Pharaoh's dream, recorded in Genesis 41:17-20, reads as follows. In my dream, behold, I stood upon the bank of the river, and behold, there came up out of the river seven kine, fat flesh, and well favored, and they fed in a meadow. And behold, seven other kine came up after them, poor and very ill favored, and lean flesh, such as I never saw in all the land of Egypt for better. And the lean and the ill-favored kind did eat up the first seven fat kind. Note that the seven lean and ill-favored kind did eat the fat flesh kind. By the reading of verse 21, we find the seven lean kind did not put on flesh after consuming the seven fat kind, which indicates that there will be no scripture in reserve, but that all will be brought unto the light. The thought is that the 7 years A.D. will consume all the corn word in the 7 years B.C., as represented also by the ears of the corn in verses 22-24. Is this not clear that all the writings in the Old Testament will be fulfilled and understood before the end of the A.D., the second coming of Yeshua? But is it not true that the biggest part or portion is not yet understood? How can one say that he has all the truth and does not and cannot explain a large portion of the Bible? Shall we pray unto the Elohim to open our eyes that we may see and arise from this Laodicean lethargy into which we have fallen? The subject is, who are the 144,000? First mention of this number in the Bible is in Revelation 7:4. I heard the number of them which were sealed, and there were sealed 144,000. And 4,000 of all the tribes of the children of Israel. Verse 2. And I saw another angel ascending from the east, having the seal of the living Elohim. And he cried with a loud voice unto the four angels unto whom it was given to hurt the earth and the sea. Note that this angel is ascending and not descending. In contrast to this, Revelation 18:1 says, and after these things I saw another angel come down from heaven, having great power, and the earth was lightened with his glory. This mighty angel is not ascending, descending, nor coming, but come. If the angel made the trip from heaven to earth in less than 15 minutes in answer to prayer, Daniel 9:4-23, while it takes light millions of years to travel part of the distance, we can easily understand why the expression, but come, is used, meaning suddenly, appearing without warning. This angel is the loud cry angel in addition unto the third angel, and the message of the fall of Babylon as given by the second angel is repeated as foretold in the 18th chapter of the Revelation. For the people of Elohim are thus prepared to stand in the hour of the temptation which they are soon to meet. Early Romans page 277. Then I saw another mighty angel commissioned to descend to the earth to unite his voice with the third angel and give power and force unto his message. Great power and glory were imparted unto the angel, and as he descended, the earth was lightened with his glory. For the light which attended this angel penetrated everywhere as he cried mightily with a strong voice. Babylon has fallen, has become the habitation of devils and the hold of every foul spirit and a cage of every unclean, hateful bird. The message of the fall of Babylon is given by the second angel is repeated, with the additional mention of the corruption which have been entering the churches since 1844. For the work of this angel comes in at the right time to join in the last great work of the third angel's message as it swells to a loud cry, and the people of Yahweh are thus prepared to stand in the hour of the temptation which they are soon to meet. I saw a great light resting upon them, and they united to fearlessly proclaim the third angel's message. This message seemed to be an addition unto the third message, joining it as the midnight cry joined the second angel. A message in 1844. Of the three angels of Revelation 14:6-11, John writes, and I saw another angel fly in the midst of the heaven, and the third angel followed them. These angels following each other were seen flying in the midst of heaven, where the sun would be at midday. In its full strength, there is a difference between these angels and the ones in Revelation 7 and 18:1. For these angels are neither ascending nor come, but continue to fly in the midst of the heaven. For the meaning is that these angels' messages are not as powerful as the ones in Revelation 18:1. For John says he saw the angel come, that is, stand upon the earth. The angel mentioned here is nearby, but the other three angels are at a distance. For this symbol shows that they could not be as powerful as the one that is close by. But these three angels are flying and continue to fly. For the meaning is that while they are not as powerful, they continue to until a long time, until this other angel of the Revelation 18:1 joins in with them, as it has been with the first, second, and third angel's messages until now. We go back to the angel Revelation 7, the one in which we are most interested in at the present time. This particular angel is ascending from the east. Ascending here could not mean departing or flying away, but simply coming or advancing. For example, in the morning, while the sun is rising or ascending, the temperature gains in heat as it nears midday. Just so with this angel, that is the seal of the 144,000, the angel was seen coming, but he is taking time. The sealing cannot begin until after he arrives, for the seal of the living Elohim is in his possession. If we can locate the time when he arrives, we may know the beginning of the sealing time of the 144,000. Did we know that the time when the first, second, and third angels' messages began? Our answer is yes. There is no reason for not knowing the definite time when this angel Revelation 7 arrived. If we did not know the time, we would have no message. And if Satan can deceive us from the present truth, he has won with his deceptive powers. John's prophecy in Revelation 7 of this ascending angel was only a vision of something to come. The fulfillment of this prophecy was realized when Sister White was given her first vision in 1844, which was a vision of the 144,000. Read early writings, page 13 to 20. John prophesied of this movement and the scene of the angel ascending in the east. John's vision became reality in 1844. But the angel is in the east, and we must await his arrival, for when he arrives, the season begins. Do the 144,000 ever die? That's our next topic. For the living saints, 144,000 in number, we must not conclude that only a part of the whole can constitute the number, and yet be true, for the statement made by the inspiration cannot be contradicted. For it reads, 144,000 in number. When mention is made of this company, it is at the same time that the Elohim makes known the day and the hour of Yahshua's coming. We can locate at what time of the world's history Elohim speaks the day and hour of Yahshua's coming, and we may know more about this company. According to early writings, page 285, that there was one clear place of the settled glory, which came the voice of Yahweh like many waters, shaking the heavens and the earth. These was a mighty earthquake. There was a mighty earthquake, for the graves were open, and those who had died in faith under the third angel's message, keeping the Sabbath, came forth. And as Yahweh spake the day and the hour of Yahshua's coming, and delivered the everlasting covenant unto his people, one may here suppose that the risen and the living make the number. But we do not believe the spirit of prophecy would call both companies, the living and the resurrected, the living saints. Okay, it says, for the 144,000 are living saints. The others resurrected Sabbath keepers, To make it positive, another reference is given found in Great Controversy, page 637. Great hailstones, every one about the weight of a talent, are doing their work of the destruction. The proudest cities of the earth are laid low. Graves are open, and many of them that sleep in the dust of the earth awake, some to everlasting life and some to shame and everlasting contempt. All who have died in the faith of the third angel's message come forth from the tomb glorious or glorified for the hearing of the Yahweh's covenant and of peace with those who have kept his law. This makes it positive that the resurrected Sabbath keepers come forth in the special resurrection of the Daniel 12. This is the time when the great hailstones are doing their destructive work, seventh plague, and the seventh angel poured out his vial into the air, and there fell upon men a great hail out of heaven, every stone about the weight of a talent. And men blasphemed Elohim because of the plague of the hail, for the plague thereof was exceeding great. Revelation 16, 17, and 21. For the resurrected Sabbath keepers did not live during the time of the plagues, for they were resurrected at the time of the seventh plague, so that they hear the announcement of the day and the hour of Yahshua's coming. If evidence can be brought to view that the 144,000 in number lived before the seventh plague, then we have positive proof that the 144,000 never died. Great Controversy, page 649. And they sang a new song before the throne, a song which no man can learn save the 144,000. It is the song of Moses and the Lamb, a song of deliverance. None but the 144,000 can learn that song, for it is a song of their experience, an experience such as no other company have ever had. They have seen the earth wasted with famine and pestilence, the sun having power to scorch men with a great heat, and they themselves have endured suffering, hunger, and thirst. Here is a positive statement that 144,000 lived in the time of the fourth plague, the sun having power to scorch men with the great heat, and the fourth angel poured out his vial upon the sun, and power was given unto him to scorch men with fire. Revelation 16:8. This is the fourth plague. How could they, the 144,000, go through the fourth plague, if the special resurrection of the Sabbath keepers, those who died under the third angel's message, did not take place until about the end of the seventh plague? If they have seen the earth wasted with famine and pestilence, and they themselves have suffered hunger and thirst, they must have lived through all the plagues. Again, they sang a new song, which no man can learn, save the 144,000, for it is a song of their experience, an experience such as no other company have ever had. How can it be possible for all to sing the same song if it is a song of their experience, except they all have the same experience? Those who had been in the grave would have the experience of death, grave, resurrection, and receiving a new body. But those who never died have seen the fulfillment of Ezekiel 9, Isaiah 63, Isaiah 60, the closing of the third angel's message, the loud cry, the close of the probation, all of the seven last plagues, and they sang this song of their experience and delivered, which no man can learn save the 144,000. Will Sister White be there with the 144,000? That's our next topic. It says, Sister White was taken in vision to one of the planets which had the seven moons, where she met Ghetto Enid. This place was so beautiful, and her desire for it is so keen, she begged the angel to let her stay. Then the angel said, you must go back, and if you are faithful, you with the 144,000 shall have the privilege of visiting all the world and viewing the handiwork of the Yahweh. See early writings, page 40. There is no contradiction in this statement, for the angel told her that she with the 144,000, meaning she is one with them, but not one of them. She will doubtless be with them, for she may be termed as the mother of them, being the messenger and founder of this movement. Nor can we suppose they will sing the song of Moses, and they sing the song of the Moses, and he, Moses, not be there, because they are the 144,000, a special coming with a special experience. There's no reason why others could not travel with them, for undoubtedly Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob will be with them, being the fathers and type. What objection could be made if others would journey with them? We may suppose that the journey would give to all the redeemed at least one trip to the other world. Only 144,000 enter temple. That's our next topic. And as they were about to enter the holy temple, Yahshua raised his lovely voice and said, only the 144,000 enter this place. And we shouted hallelujah. This temple was supported by 7 pillars. All of the transparent gold set with the pearls most glorious. For the wonderful thing I saw there I cannot describe. I saw their tables of stone, in which the names of 144,000 were engraved in letters of gold. After we beheld the glory of the temple, we went out. Early writings, page 19. It is clear that no others were to enter the holy temple except 144,000. Again, it is clear that she went in, for she says, the wonderful things I saw there I cannot describe. And after we beheld the glory of the temple, we went out. She could see and not see the things inside the temple unless she had gone in, and she could not have come out if she had never entered in. Some may think that Sister White is one of the 144,000 because she entered this temple. And now that she is dead, that part of the 144,000 will be resurrected. There is no cause for confusion here. She could have entered the temple before or after, or she could have gone right along with them, and still it would not change the thought. We must remember this is only a vision and not real 144,000. Not the real 144,000. They were not made up at the time. Neither was bodily there, for this vision was given for her to make a report and reveal a certain truth. In the other words, she was a reporter. What kind of report could have been given if she had not entered the temple? For the command, only the 144,000 enter here, had no reference to her whether she should stay out or enter. She is one with them, but not one of them. What kind of seal is it? References made in Testimonies of Ministers, page 445. Okay, it says, for the subject is about the sealing of the Revelation 7, the 144,000, for we quote, this sealing of the servants of Yahweh is the same that was shown unto Ezekiel in the vision. Now, if the sealing of the 144,000 of the Revelation 7 is the same as Ezekiel 9, in order to find the kind of seating it is, at the time of this beginning, we must study Ezekiel 9, 1 and 9. He cried also in mine ears with a loud voice, saying, call them that have charge over the city to draw near, even every man with his destroying weapon in his hand. And behold, 6 men came, from the way of the higher gate which lieth toward the north, and every man a slaughter weapon in his hand. The one man among them was clothed with the linen with a writer's inkhorn by his side, and they went in and stood beside the brazen altar. And the glory of the Elohim of Israel was gone up from the cherub, whereupon he was to the threshold of the house. And he called unto the man clothed with the linen, which had the writer's inkhorn by his side. And Yahweh said unto him, Go through the midst of the city to the midst of Jerusalem, and set a mark upon the foreheads of the men that sigh and that cry for all the abominations that be done in the midst thereof. And unto the others he said in mine hearing, Go ye after him through the city, and smite, that not your eyes spare, nor they have your pity. Slay utterly old and young, both maids and little children and women, but come not near any man upon whom is a mark, and begin at my sanctuary. Then they began at the ancient men which were before the house, and he said unto them, Defile the house and fill the courts with the slain. So she asked, Go ye forth. And they went forth and slew in the city. And it came to pass while they were slaying them, and I was left, that I fell upon my face and cried and said, O Yahweh Elohim, wilt thou destroy all the residue of the Israel, in thy pouring out of thy fury upon the Jerusalem? Then said he unto me, The iniquity of the house of Israel and Judah is exceedingly great. It is positive that the sealing of the 144,000 in Ezekiel 9, the separation sifting in the church, the righteous from the unrighteous, volume 1, page 181, I asked the meaning of the shaking I had seen, and was shown that it would be caused by the straight testimony called forth by the counsel of the true witness unto the latest end. Read the entire page. Note, the shaking begins after the straight testimony of the true witness is come. Next we go into our next topic is the two seals, and in the Sabbath, the seal of the 144,000, I'm asking the question, is the Sabbath the seal of the 144,000? First of all, it will be noticed that the definition of seal is an instrument which is used to seal, fasten up, or enclose securely, to establish or settle beyond the question, to point out and determine designate. An effort will be made to bring forth enough Bible evidence for the satisfying anyone believing in the Scriptures that all who were saved in the ages past, as well as those who are to be saved now, must have the seal of Yahweh. Paul, in his letter unto the Ephesians, said that they were to be sealed. And grieve not the Holy Spirit of Yahweh, whereby ye are sealed until the day of the redemption, Ephesians 4:30. For the grace of the satisfaction wrought in the soul by the Holy Spirit is a seal, an assurance of one's redemption is to come of a joyful resurrection. The use and end of this sealing is the sacredness and safety of the thing sealed from the eyes of the curiosity and hands of the violence, which otherwise would be abused by the strangers and enemies. Thus the children of Yahweh are past the censure of the wicked world. They are preserved as precious things for Yahweh's own use to be with him in heaven, quoting 2 Timothy 2:19, written unto the Corinthians. Nevertheless, the foundation of Elohim standeth sure, having this seal. The Yahweh knoweth them that are his, who hath also sealed us and given the earnest of the Spirit in our hearts. 2 Corinthians 1:22. For we read in Revelation 8 and 9 of the seven angels with the seven trumpets. These seven trumpets indicate the principal political and warlike events which were to transpire during the time of the gospel church. For For the seed of the 144,000 belongs unto the time of the sixth trumpet. Begin with Revelation 9:1, for we read about the angel with the fifth trumpet. Verse 4 of this chapter we quote, "And it was commanded them that they should not hurt the grass of the earth, neither any green thing, neither any tree, but only those men that have not the seal of the Elohim in their foreheads." Here we see that many years before the third angel's message ever began to be preached, the saints of the Elohim were sealed with the seal of Yahweh. Just the same as the ones under the third angel's message are to be sealed. According to these scriptures, which are plainly stated, we must conclude that the saints of Yahweh are sealed with the present truth in all ages, and whatever that present truth is, that is the seal. Present truth under the third angel's message is the Sabbath truth. Therefore, the Sabbath is a seal that seals the people who are obedient unto it. Quoting Great Controversy, page 452, the seal of Yahweh's law is found in the fourth commandment. Whenever the Sabbath was changed by the papal power, the seal was taken from the law. Early Writings, page 58, the sealing time is very short and will soon be over. Those who died under the third angel's message keeping the Sabbath are sealed with the Sabbath truth, but the 144,000 never die. While they must keep Sabbath and have that seal, they must sigh and cry for the abomination that are in the church, for otherwise they cannot receive the mark by the angel of the writer's inkhorn of the Ezekiel 9. Well, I have news here. B.T. Holifield didn't give the whole story. If the Seventh-day Adventists are sealed by the seventh-day Sabbath, and that's all they have for present truth in the time of the three angels' messages, then the 144,000 are sealed by the unfolding of the rest of those holy days since 1970, because Yahweh raised up a prophet out of the Adventist Church, Brother Stevie Johnson, in 1970 to bring forth the creation calendar and restoring all the additional holy Sabbath days found in Leviticus 23 unto the seventh-day Sabbath. For the seventh-day Sabbath was the first holy day mentioned in Leviticus 23 in the law of Moses. Okay, but so it goes on to say here, Ezekiel 9, which is a seal according unto the testimonies and ministers, page 445, volume 5, page 210 and 16, volume 3, pages 266 and 7. For the seal of the 144,000 is the separation of the faithful from the disloyal ones, the purification of the church. Those who do not keep the truth and indulge in the sins and the abominations, who try to throw a cloak over the existing evil, will fall under the figure of the five men with the slaughter weapons in of the Ezekiel 9. For the Sabbath has been present truth since 1845, and being the seal of the law of Yahweh, has been sealing the law among the people of Elohim ever since that time. Isaiah 8:16, bind up the testimony, seal the law among my disciples. This has been the work of the third angel, and for this reason the third angel has no seal. For the seal is in the law. But the angel of Revelation 17 has a seal in his hand. Ezekiel calls him the man with the writer's inkhorn, who is a sitting mark upon the men who sigh and cry for all the abominations that be done in the midst of the church. This is the seal of the 144,000, but all the saved under the third angel are sealed with the Sabbath seal. But the 144,000, they're the representatives of all the three angels. They're the first fruits harvest that is produced by the three angels. But the fourth and the fifth angel has to join. The fourth angel is the one with the seal of all the other holy days. Brother Johnson, Seventh-day Adventist, restored in 1970 into the Seventh-day Adventist Church, and they rejected the additional seal of all the other holy days of Passover, Pentecost, Atonement, Feast of Tabernacles, Feast of the Unleavened Bread Week. All of that they rejected. So therefore, the Adventist that rejected the unfolding of the truth of the Sabbath seal, and from 1970 on, are eternally lost. They cannot be sealed. So apparently the 144,000 has to already be sealed in the Adventist Church. They have to be ones that have accepted all of the Sabbaths that are mentioned in Leviticus 23, along with the seventh-day Sabbath being the first one mentioned in Leviticus 23. For the 144,000 having the seal are also marked sealed by the angel of Revelation 7, which is the same as the one of Ezekiel 9. In other words, it may be termed a double seal. Ezekiel 9 is not a Sabbath seal. Now here's E.T. Hollis making this as his next topic. In the Shepherd Rod, Volume 1, page 29, it says Ezekiel 9 is not a Sabbath seal. Well, he may be right. We're going to reserve that for our next study. This brings the close of our study. This hour, contact us at the 11th hour call. That's number 11. Click on our audio archive. Let's close now with a song. It will be worth it all. Is the promised land made for all the free? When our race on earth is run, there's no broken dream with no more memory. It will be worth it all when we get home. It will be worth it all just to see His face when He claims us for His own. Then 10 million years to sing amazing grace. It will be worth it all when we get home. There's no sadness, wealth, there's no tears and eyes, there's no heartache, grief or woe. There's no shattered hopes will ever cloud the sky. It will be worth it all when we get home. It will be worth it all just to see His face when He claims us for His own home. Then 10 million years to sing amazing grace. It will be worth it all when we get home.